with information on the latest developments in assistive technology and initiatives, from the studios of 2RPH in Sydney, RPH Australia brings you AbleQuest. Hello, I'm Barbara Sullivan. In a previous segment of AbleQuest, we covered the very active group behind an initiative called Sailability. Sailability is not just about helping people with disabilities enjoy the enormous pleasure of sailing, but about making it possible for everyone to sail, regardless of age, experience, or ability. It is truly an organisation based on inclusion. In this week's AbleQuest, we meet the man who makes Sailability possible, the man who is responsible for the design and manufacture of superb, universally acclaimed boats that everyone can sail. I spoke by phone with the inimitable Chris Mitchell, owner of Hansa Sailing, and a person whose lateral and visionary thinking, combined with practical approach, is admired across the world. Hello, Chris. Before we talk about Hansa Sailing, you've got such an interesting background yourself that it would be a perfect introduction for listeners. Let's start with your, shall we call it, Huckleberry Finn days on Port Phillip Bay.
We moved down onto Port Phillip Bay when I was about two. Our back gate opened onto Port Phillip Bay, so I could spend a lot of time out on the beach. I was a pretty shy little guy, and so I was supposed to keep to myself. I loved fishing, but I didn't particularly like rowing. So I suppose at five or six, seven, I was pinching my mother's bed sheets and broom handles and all sorts of things just to make sails so as I could sail out to where the fish were. So this went on for years, canoes and all sorts of oddball things, rafts that I tried to sail. That would get me out on the water, and I learned a lot about sailing, but I wasn't part of the local sailing scene. I'd see regular boats, but I was doing my own thing. This sort of translated into later in life, where I went my own way. And if I was trained as a naval architect, then I'd be doing conventional things, and our boats wouldn't be.
After Port Phillip Bay, when you were a young man, you were up in Asia building boats up there. Tell us about that.
I lived in Singapore for quite a while. I worked in Indonesia for years, and I was in Bangladesh for nearly 4 years. Singapore, I was working on the edge of the oil industry with a lot of time, and I would help people who'd bought yachts and guys with dreams of sailing around the world with boats they'd bought after earning a lot of money in the oil field. I'd help them make the thing so it'd work. So modifying boats and also some traditional boats built in Malaysia, how to set them up for cruising. I was always fascinated by what people used as tenders, rowing back and forth from their cruising yachts. And the French use a lot of sailing tenders, but they'd use little things like an Optimist, which is a boxy little dinghy used for children internationally, but it's a terrible rowing boat. So I set about creating what I thought was the perfect little sailing tender. You could row it, you could sail it, and you could put a little outboard motor on it. That's what actually evolved into our first little accessible sailing dinghy.
During those early years, you developed your philosophy about sailing that was based on inclusion.
I produced the prototype of what we used later on, but then I moved back to Australia. And
right.
Because I had a deck chair, so I had a sling seat, and I put a joystick for steering. And you're facing forward, so you can see where you're going. So now a joystick's like a wheel. You don't have a tiller behind you that back to front, and you have to move your body from side to side to stop the thing from capsizing. But then I did one with a ballast centerboard so it wouldn't capsize. And then disabled people saw that. And it was just at the time when Sailability was starting in Australia.
Right.
Sailability is an organization that originally came from England. And I had my first little 2.3, just under 8 feet long. And it had a ballast keel. You could sit down. I also had a reefing system where you could just pull some ropes and you'd roll the sail up. It was what I thought was the perfect little boat for introducing Asian people to sailing. But here it was. I had a ballast keel in it. The disabled community saw it and adopted it.
I understand you're a proponent of universal design. Probably without you thinking about universal design, it just happened that you employed the principles of it in the way that you approached design. Is that true?
Well, that was very funny. Well, we had our little boats and they were all going around the world and they're in use in Japan. There was a student in Tokyo. He was an architect student and he was a volunteer or he was a disabled person, I'm not sure, with the local Sailability branch, and he showed a video of our boat sailing to his professor in his class. And next thing, we received an email from is she? And he said he was shocked when he saw our little boats. And we thought, oh, yeah, what have we done? This is the finest example of universal design he'd ever seen. We thought, well, what's that?
Yes.
So Ishii was actually part of organising a conference in the United Nations Year of the Aging about 15 years ago in Perth, and he arranged for us to go over there and do a presentation about universal design on our little boat. We thought, wow, okay. And then we realised that the sailing program that we're actually supporting and trying to promote, we weren't about disabled sailing at all. These boats were for anyone. The whole thing was anyone could sail them. So why would you just have disabled sailing? So we realised that the program we're actually promoting is universal design in a service.
Can you explain what is meant by universal design of principles, I suppose?
I think it's design of products and services which can be used by a very broad spectrum of the population through their entire lifespans. So it's okay for able-bodied kids, disabled kids, through to adults and even aging people who are becoming disabled with age. And it makes no difference where you are, anywhere along all that. It's not disabled design because it also has to be interesting and doesn't look anything disabled. You know, like people design disabled things, and that's what they are. But good universal design is very elegant, it's very simple, it's very comforting, and it's very easy to use. It's intuitive.
And it just makes sense.
It makes sense. I think if people understood what universal design was about, it would cause a lot of change. The trouble is today, I think universal design is being hijacked quite often as disabled design. I saw a paper that had been done by a naval architecture student. It was labelled a sailing boat of universal design, but when you actually looked at it, it was very specific disabled design. It had tables and places you'd park wheelchairs, and its shape was really odd and not very functional, purely to accommodate wheelchairs.
So it was more accessible design. The Hansa boats, I mean, talking about the use by disabled, are they used in the Paralympics?
Yes. Well, we have a boat called the Scud 18. It's actually 20 foot long. That was a bit to make it reminiscent of an 18 foot skiff. It's like an 18 foot skiff with a spinnaker, but it has deep draft and a bulb keel, two rudders to give it directional stability. But it's a Scud, and that's SK for skiff, UD for universal design. But it's a two-person boat. We were going to see if we could get it into the Paralympics because we were trying to promote to get a boat into the Paralympics that severely disabled people could sail, because the boats being used back then were focused on athleticism and too many controls. You want to keep the controls to a minimum. But sailing is no longer in the Paralympics, not in Japan. Rio was the last one, and now the sailing administrators are really trying to get sailing back into the Paralympics. So they're looking at our other boats. In fact, our 303, which is 10 foot long, 3 metres, it is now being used as a para-world sailing class. And that is because a boat like the Scud is 20 feet long. It's quite complex. It's got a deep keel. Mm-hmm. It needs a crane to launch it. And it's not very good for development in the smaller countries, whereas a boat like our 303 is. And it's simple, it's small, you can launch it off a beach, and anyone can sail it. So this is the type of boat that will actually help get sailing back into the Paralympics.
You're the secret weapon. Talking of international sailing, the company that you have built to produce these boats now is global. You've got representatives, I understand, in about 8 countries, and it sounds like a very successful export business for Australia.
Yeah, there are nearly 3,000 of our boats around the world. We don't build them all in Australia now. A lot of them are built in Indonesia, near Singapore. We develop new things here, new products, new boats. We make all the specialised components that go into our boats. They're made here, and we ship them up to Singapore and across to Batam. I think the boats are in 35, 38 countries.
And I understand you've set up a foundation.
We have the Sailing for Everyone Foundation, because that's what we're about. I don't relate very well to the business side of it. It's just there to build boats, and we're really about development. We're really about encouraging Sailing for Everyone. The Sailing for Everyone Foundation helps promotion and sponsors people, helps people start what we call accessible sailing clubs around the world. And they use our boats. That provides the funding. The Governor General is a patron.
So this approach of yours and the fact that you're actually not particularly interested in the commercial aspect, but more in what sailing can do for people, for everyone, is presumably one of the reasons that you were awarded the New South Wales Maritime Medal. So congratulations on that. Now, you made some interesting points about your boats being branded as specially designed for the disabled in your acceptance speech. Can you elaborate on that a little more? You alluded to it earlier in the conversation.
Well, sailing administrators, I think it's organisations everywhere and a lot of people, they have a really polarised view of everything. You know, there's the Olympics and there's the Paralympics. There's able-bodied people and there's disabled people. To us, they're just people. Our whole thing has been, hang on, these boats are used by everyone. It's not just how many boats. Somebody asked me the other day, how many of your boats that you build each year are for disabled people? I says, well, I have no idea. They're just for everyone, anyone. I don't know who sails them, but maybe 25, 30, 40% of people who sail them are disabled. But we keep banging on about this to yachting administrators, that if they were to use little boats like cows, little boats of universal design as entry-level craft, yes, they would get a lot of new people into the sport. They would get mums and their children, girls. Little boats like ours, with a ballasted keel, you step into it and you sit down, you're facing forward, and you're sailing immediately. You can get a whole bunch of school kids, and within 5-10 minutes of them sitting in the boat, you put two boys there, and they're racing around those boys. What we say to the sailing fraternity is, if you use little boats like this as entry-level craft, you would get millions of new people around the world into sailing. You'd probably turn around the decline in sailing. You would then be including all disabled. People would be able to just join in, which is really an inclusive program. You could then see yourself as something entirely different. And instead of being a sport just for a symbol of wealth and privilege, sailing could be a progressive organisation. Yeah, then just forget the disability. You're involved in the same activity. There is an offshoot, a discipline, really, of inclusive design. And inclusive design doesn't talk about disability at all. It talks about diversity, and it says everyone's different. But I think change needs to be slow and steady, and then it becomes more permanent. And you can't force anyone into anything. There'll be a backlash. So it's a matter of just keeping ticking along.
Well, you better stick around for a long time to make sure that you can see it all through.
Oh, we'd like to.
Chris, that's been wonderful talking to you, and thanks very much for giving us your time today.
You have just been listening to AbleQuest, a program that looks at developments in assistive technology and initiatives. From Barbara Sullivan and Marnie Roper, thank you for listening, and goodbye till next program.